When was the last time you had a decent cup of coffee? Have you heard someone complain that, we went out for coffee, we paid $3.50, $4.50, whatever, and it was lousy, watery, terrible? Lots of people have lots of coffee, but do they know much about it? Maybe not. Well, we, some time ago, interviewed someone on the 100th birthday of the refrigerator, and since then we've had a number of segments on particular products, mainly the design of them, but this time it's on coffee. What do we know about coffee that most of us have every day? Joining me to talk about that is someone who's been involved with coffee for a very long time, either in cafes or restaurants, and now in a firm that produces coffee. Roast the coffee, grind the coffee, package the coffee, sell the coffee. In Australia, good thing to be doing. And his name is Joe Pangallo. Joe, welcome to Counterpoint.
How are you, Amanda?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Now, look, Joe, is this right that the coffee berry was first fire roasted and boiled to brew a coffee back in the 1800s?
That's when it was first brewed. Well, actually, what happened was it was a goat herder just threw it into a fire and just realised that
the smell was pretty good.
the aroma that was coming out, but he decided to boil those berries and started making his first brew.
Well, there you are. We can thank goat men for more than we imagine. Now, in the 1400s, then, apparently the Turks decided to crush it and brew it in a more refined way. I had never realised that the Turks were the ones that did this. See, I've always thought of coffee as being Italian, and you've got Italian blood. You can understand that.
Well, the Italians were the ones that perfected it.
Okay, we'll come to that. Yep. Let's just follow the history through.
But the Turks were the ones that actually started grinding it into a powder form and began to brew the black liquid.
And that was in the 1400s, wasn't it?
1400s. And the first Turks opened the first coffee house in Constantinople in 1475. Using their fire-roasted berries that they were producing at the time.
Well, how long did it take to get to Italia?
To Italia? Well, you're probably pretty aware of the Fiorina Cafe in San Marco. Well, that was the first cafe opened in 1720 in San Marco Square.
Cafe Florian?
Yep, Florian, yeah.
Wow, 1700s. But coffee got there a bit earlier, a couple of hundred years earlier, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
It arrived itself, yeah.
1570s when it first arrived on the shores of Italy through a Venice, one of those merchant of Venice took it over to Europe, and that's how it got its way to Italy.
I wonder if Shakespeare mentions coffee in The Merchant of Venice. One never knows. But look, it's a very international story, isn't it? Because we've got a goat man from I don't know where, then we've got the Turks, then we've got the Italians, and then, not to be outdone, the Parisians jump into the job.
They did, and it was the Parisians who were the ones that got the plant given to them as a gift, and they were pretty hell-bent on protecting that until a pilgrim smuggler, an Indian pilgrim smuggler, went and tried to get a cutting back from the Europeans, but failed. But it was eventually got to Europe through another lieutenant who went, as the story goes, went across and was able to get a cutting back into the other side of Europe.
Great. But the French, a Parisian metalsmith, made the first percolator. Now, the ones, when I was a kid, we had I forget what it was called. It was one of those ceramic percolators that you put on top of the stove.
Yep.
But apparently the French had some metalsmith did the first coffee percolator in the early 1800s.
1822 it was. It was developed in France, and it was a brewing unit, to pressurised brewing unit, and it was the first percolator to be
developed. They did the first percolator and then the first machine to do it under pressure as well.
Yeah, but in 1901, it was Luigi Bezzera who invented the first commercial espresso coffee machine. That's the Italian influence. And then in 1905, Desiderio Pavoni, the first known barista, actually, he perfected, and they still make the Pavoni machines today, he perfected the 9-bar pressure, which is their guide of producing coffee today in cafes using the 9-bar pressure system. And he was the first to perfect that, and it's still going today.
And he bought the patent from the Bezzera people, didn't he?
Yep. He bought it off the Bezzera company, and he improved the brewing techniques. And Amanda, it's so simplistic, the actual units, that they've just... The only difference from those early 1900 machines is just electronics, but the actual running mechanism and design is still the same as it was then.
Yeah. Well, we've seen, just over my life, quite a lot of iterations of how to get a good coffee. I mean, there was the stovetop thing. And what are the Italians call that? When you put the little, the mocha on top of the stove, it's like a drippolator thing. But then the drippolator where you have the little, like, blotting paper bag and stuff drips through. Then the plunger.
Yep.
I found them a bit hard, actually. You know, some plungers are not of high quality. And when you want to push it down, it all goobles up and makes a mess. I'm not sure what the siphon is. You might explain that to me. But I get the domestic espresso machine.
Yep.
I've got one of those. And now we're up to capsules.
Yep. The siphon is actually a glass jar or glass jug.
Yep.
And on top of it is a glass bowl with a glass tube that runs into the glass jug. And it works on pressure, vacuum. And you boil the water in the jug below.
Yep.
And you've got the coffee, which has been ground coarse, in the top section of the bowl.
Yeah.
And what it does, it works as the water boils, the steam rises through. It's a bit similar to the stovetop, the mocha, same principle. It's all done with gases and vapors that rise through. And then once it rises through and it condenses within the coffee granules, then you have the reverse happening where it runs back into the jug below and you get your coffee.
Mm. Well, I bought my husband a machine. I'm not allowed to advertise it here, but it's a Swiss machine.
Right.
And it was a German who was running the NATO College in Rome who said he'd, in very, you know, Teutonic efficiency, looked at all the machines and decided this was the best one. And that's the one we have. It grinds its own coffee and it has a little plastic thing that you drop into a jug of milk and it sucks the milk up and does the foaming. But I also remember Marco Lavazza telling me that he thought unless you were a trained barista, you wouldn't get better coffee than you get from a capsule. Now, I'm not sure about that. I'm in the I like it ground the day I'm having the coffee position. But capsules do make it easy for the busy lifestyle today, don't they?
Well, the lifestyle that we're leading today, we're time poor and everybody's on the run and needs a quick coffee fix. The capsule fits in perfectly there because you just drop it in within space of about 15, 20 seconds. You've got yourself a good kick to start your day.
Yeah. You do drink coffee yourself, don't you, Joe?
I do.
Yeah, right. Now, when you're at home, how do you have coffee?
Well, I drink black coffee.
Yeah.
I'm a stern believer that we use the analogy in the industry similar to wine. You drink your coffee to get the full flavour, should be drunk black, but unfortunately in Australia, 95% of the coffees are drunk with milk. But I'm a sure black drinker because I like to sort of get the full flavours and aromas of the naked coffee.
Mm. And Arabica coffees are meant to be the better ones, aren't they, than the Robusta?
Well, you've got Arabica, which are grown at a higher altitude to the Robusta.
Yeah.
Now, the Arabica beans are grown in altitudes higher than 800 metres above sea level.
Yep.
And the good Arabicas come from the South America, Africa and Southeast Asia, and they form the base or the foundation of the blends. And then you add in Cherry Robusta, which is the premium Robusta, and that gives the creamy finish to the coffee. So when you see a nice crema on top of a coffee that's being poured,
it's got Robusta in the blend.
A nice Robusta, just to finish that off.
Yeah. So you think? Do you think Robusta's better, or do you think they both have a different purpose?
No, they both complement each other. To drink a Robusta on its own, it's very acidic and very stringent. So you need the balance, the mellow of the Arabica beans to mellow that profile down. Robustas are more used as a blend.
Yeah, I get you.
To complement the Arabica aromas and textures.
Yeah, I get what you say. Now, the issue of the roasts, I read somewhere the other day, I don't know where, a cooking magazine or something, not necessarily someone who knew anything about it,
yeah,
that you should be looking for coffee that looks dry, not with an oily finish on your beans, because that means it's been overdone. So that might mean that person thinks a light roast, 7 minutes or so, is better, because with the medium ones, I think you're saying you go up to nearly a quarter of an hour, 12 to 13 minutes, and dark roasts even more.
Yep.
But you think, this was a surprise to me, a dark roast brings out the sweetness in the coffee.
It
but
does.
That's counterintuitive, because if you look at the three lined up, a light, medium and dark roast, I suspect you'd say, well, the dark one will be more bitter.
I'll go back to what I said earlier about the analogy with the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's palate is different. So there's not going to be one blend that's going to suit everybody. So it comes down to the palate of the individual coffee drinker. And in Australia, because we use so much milk, we need a lighter roast to cut through the fat of the cream of the milk to get the full flavour of the coffee. So you'll find that most cafes have got a medium to light roast, and they need that acidity. But for those like myself that likes a nice, rich, dark, short black coffee, then I'll be going towards a dark roast because of the caramelisation and the sweetness and less acidity that you'll get with a dark roast coffee.
Well, they say you learn something every day, and that's true in my case in relation to this. But there's something else you've told me that surprises me, that light and medium roasts might have a higher concentration of caffeine.
That's correct. That's correct.
Don't you think I'll have a weaker one, it'll be better for me, so there won't be so much caffeine, won't be so much, strength, et cetera, et cetera. And you're saying it's quite the reverse. There must be some chemical process that gets rid of the caffeine when you cook it for longer. Roast it for longer.
It's all about, it's about the roasting process, because when the coffee, when the green beans go through the coffee roasting process, it goes through a number of chemical changes. And as you roast, the longer you roast, the beans go through these chemical changes that changes the characteristics of the green beans. So the green bean starts off with no taste, no flavour. And eventually, through the roasting process, it gets to the characteristics that we get when we serve it up in a cup.
Mm. Well, look, you've opened my eyes to what happens when I go and buy a cup of coffee. Now, we're not allowed to mention brands, as you know, Joe, but I can say to listeners that if you go to supermarkets, you should have a look on the back and look for the Australian-produced coffee, because the beans might not be grown here, but everything else will be done here. And if you're like me, sure, you've got your local roaster that specialises, and that's great for more special occasions. But for day-to-day, hop off and look in your supermarket and try and find someone who's doing it here in Australia. Joe knows where they are. Thanks very much, Joe Pangallo, for cluing us in on our daily treat, a good short black.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks, Joe. That was Joe Pangallo, who's made a life interest of coffee. But I don't sense affection, no gratitude or love. Your loyalty is not to me, but to the stars above.